Hey, everybody, we are forgetful and forgot to plug the thing we were supposed to plug today. So we're recording now. Man, we announced it yesterday. Can you believe it? Chuck and Brad coming back for our semi-annual Halloween show.
They haven't heard.
Heard the joke that refers to yet. But you will on the podcast.
They're going to love it.
No, but we haven't done it every year. We didn't do it during COVID. But this is our third annual Chuck and Brad's. Wait. Third?
It's just our third. Just say it's our third.
It's our third Chuck and Brad's Halloween Spooktacular. It's our live Halloween comedy show at the Comedy Connection in East Providence, Rhode Island on Thursday, October 21st. It's going to be awesome.
We'll be joined by Ray Harrington, Liz Moniz, and Brian Bowden for a night of possibly spooky fun.
Yeah, and as always, if you don't know about our Halloween shows, man, they are fucking bizarre. And the best way to kind of explain it to you is it's a mix of stand-up and sketch and experimental live comedy. If you like the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror episodes, that's kind of where we go with it. We love horror movies. We love the season of fall, and we do a lot of fun stuff. Go to chuckandbradpodcast.com for all info and tickets. And also, we did an announcement video where Brad and I shot a sketch in a pumpkin patch, and I love it. And I'm going to be honest, I feel like there's no way to get it to people. Like Instagram, you can't really put it there. No. I heard IGTV is useless from a marketing genius. And so I put it on IGTV, and it was useless. But if you go to chuckandbradpodcast.com, you'll see that announcement sketch. I'm so proud of that sketch, and I feel like no one's seeing it, so go fucking watch it.
I turned it into a
flip. And share it. Tweet it.
I turned it into a flip book and mailed it to the Library of Congress.
So. Go to my Twitter, Discount Chuck. Share it. RT. We put a lot of time into it. Not really. We would have a short amount of time, but that's part of what's fun.
I feel like I put a lot of time in.
You did not. I worked until 4 o'clock in the morning last night.
We hope you all can make the show.
Yes.
October 21st,
Thursday,
Comedy Connection.
Comedy Connection.
And hope to see you there.
Chuck and Brad's Halloween Spooktacular. Ooh. Oh, that was pretty good. That was a Dracula, and Doug was a ghost. You want to be at something?
Ooh.
Oh, Brad's a cat.
Yes, I am. I'm a sick cat.
No, Brad just has diarrhea.
I'm comedian, writer, and filmmaker Chuck Staton from the punk band Senior Discount.
And I'm writer and comedian Brad Rohr from the Providence Improv Guild.
And this is the Chuck and Brad Podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 540 of the Chuck and Brad Podcast.
I'm Chuck.
I'm Brad.
Wow, that sounds like a lot of podcasts. 540?
That is a lot.
Yeah, that's a real lot.
How many years have you guys been at this?
I think only two. That's what's fucked up.
Oh my God. Three episodes a week?
No, we're... I think we started 2009.
January of 2009, yeah.
Isn't really? That crazy? Yeah, well, you know, we were different men back then. So wow. It was about... it just revolved around overweight cats. That's what we focused on for the first 9 years.
That's
and
wild.
We made a left turn.
Honkin' Chonkers.
Honkin' Chonkers. That was the first. <That's not the name. laughs> That was our names on the podcast. It was Honk
and Chonkers. All right.
No, we. The podcast started a little bit more about like me and my band.
Right.
And Brad and his improv group as well. But like we really focused more on like the exploits of my band for a long time. So we really catered more to music fans and the music scene.
Okay.
So.
And how long did you have a band prior to starting the pod?
Probably like 6 years, maybe.
Oh, so you were like embedded in. I have no idea how old you are. I actually have no idea.
Well, I started the band when I was 5. So yeah. I just turned 21 yesterday.
All right. Okay. Were you on the xylophone?
Yeah. No, I'm 37.
How old are you? I'll be 35 in November.
All right. So pretty similar. Yeah. I started a band. When I was like, by the way, okay, hold on.
There
hold
we go.
On.
I was like, when can I fit in the name of our guest?
Oh, yeah. All right. Here we are.
Oh, sorry. I wasn't sure if I should chime in.
No. It's good. It was great. So we're here with our buddy, Doug Key of the Rogue Island Comedy Festival.
Does anybody clap after my name?
Yeah.
Nobody claps?
At home, they clap. They do. It's up to the audience. That's their part.
We got people up in Winnipeg going crazy for you right now.
We do have, I mean, I'll tell Doug. Yeah, we'll have to give him a little bit of a background of the podcast. So basically, when I was like 18, 19, I graduated high school, started a band called Senior Discount.
Mm-hmm.
We started playing around Rhode Island.
Discount Chuck.
That's right. And see, exactly. So we started playing around Rhode Island and, you know, the big club for us we wanted to play was Lupo's.
Right.
Which the new Lupo's, the Strand, mm-hmm. as you know it. And we did that in like 2004. And since then, we played there like 17 times.
Yeah.
Played there like a ton of times. You know, played all around the East Coast and with like other punk bands like, you know, Less Than Jake, Catch 22, Street Light Manifesto.
Oh, no way.
Big Day in the Kids Table. Yeah, that's the scene we're from.
I just pretended like I knew who half of those were.
You know, Less Than
I've
Jake.
I've heard Less Than Jake. That was one that, yeah.
You must know Big D because they're Boston.
I have one. Yeah. Nah, it's medium. I was born premature.
I was going to say, you're more like the Kids Table. I think. No, you must know you know Big D or no? Big D and the Kids Table?
I don't. Really? But I do remember it was called Lupo's Heartbreak Hotel.
That's right? What it yes. was. And then it was Lupo's at the Strand at the new venue.
Gotcha.
For a while. I think it's just the Strand now, which is a club in Providence, holds about 2,000 people.
Yeah, I've been backstage there. One of my friends is Pat Downs, who's the lead singer of Badfish. And,
so Badfish is one of the bands that like
yeah.
brought us there like a million times.
Yeah. So Pat used to be, the sax player of Badfish.
And yes.
The old lead singer left, and then Pat took over as lead singer. It sounds way more like Brad Knowles, I think, than the,
yeah,
the original
yeah.
guy.
Yeah. We played with them like a million times over the years. Yep. The nice. Boston's in Boston and, you know, Warped Tour and all. Yeah. Like, it's all punk rock and ska stuff. We're a punk rock band.
Well, that's a fun little history. So you were in music, and then you did improv.
I did improv. Yeah, I started in Chicago and wasn't good at it, and then you know grad school in Arkansas, yeah. and then came up here. And because I had Chicago training, mm-hmm. when I joined like a local startup improv group, I seemed like I knew what I was doing. But really, just the blind making fart jokes around the blind.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
the blind. They've got to be more susceptible than farts, you think, than the seeing, right?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, when you lose a sense, the other ones are heightened.
Yeah, so. Yeah. The daredevil scenario.
Yes.
Yeah. The daredevil complex.
Yes.
Is that what it's called?
Absolutely, that's what it's called.
He must have been so distracted.
Yes.
Right?
He must have been like,
daredevil?
Yeah, he must have been he hears like somebody, you know, a woman being attacked in an alleyway, and then he's like, is that tiramisu?
Yeah.
You know, like,
oh, yeah.
So he's going to be so distracted.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And that's true, because alleys, generally speaking, don't smell great.
Yeah.
And so, like, he's got to tune all that out while he's fighting.
Of
like,
course.
All the different odors. Right. There's a fish with just the head and the tail and its bones in between.
Yeah.
It's a banana peel, an old boot.
Right.
So,
an old boot. Yeah. So, you know, I was in the band, and right away when we were young, like 2004, I was like, oh, I want to stand out from the other bands. And so we started doing comedy videos back then. And that kind of led me down the path of like filmmaking. That's what I went to college for. Brad was in the improv group. My bassist was in the improv group. Saw Brad, pulled him into the videos. We started doing videos. But as time went on, they were harder and harder to do because our standards went up. So it was like, well, now we have to have this many storylines, this many cameras, this is the lights. And so we were doing this to promote shows, but we were really time consuming to film, especially a long time ago. And because of that, we said, let's do a podcast. It's a lot easier to do. We can do one every week. People can come back to the Senior Discounts website. They can check out what we're doing. And that's why the podcast started, basically.
Well, you kind of got in right when like pods were like blowing up. Because I actually started comedy later that year in 2009.
Yeah.
And that's when I started like, you know, listening to like the Laugh Factory podcast.
Yes.
And, you know, and it was just like a bunch of comics, you know, in LA that would just sit around a table and shoot the shit. Well, and I had no idea the concept until then.
That's what it was interesting to us is like, you know, Kevin Smith was an early podcaster. And so there wasn't that many podcasts. Like now, I'd say in the past like 6 or 7 years, it's become like, oh, there's a million podcasts. But in 2009... there was not a million podcasts. There was very few podcasts. And we got into it. And, you know, it was really fun. We did a ton of music stuff over the years, a ton of, you know, comedians eventually. And it led to us doing like a lot of the stuff that we do. Like now we moderate at like Comic Cons and stuff like that.
That's awesome.
Which is really, really fun. That's how I got my first job writing was like I'm a quote unquote journalist. And that led to like a second job and a third job and stuff like that. And that even led to me working for all the people I work with because we filmed one of our live podcasts, and then the people I worked for at Tell 'em Steve Dave, they were doing this huge show at the Gramercy Theater in New York, and I pitched myself on the back of what I'd filmed with us, and that's how I got hired, and I've been working for them for 5 years now.
Great.
So it's weird. It's like podcasting became like a part of my career.
Well, yeah, and you guys are the perfect example of like, you know, perseverance and consistency, because that's like anything, you need to just keep doing it every week,
right?
Yeah, a lot of people give up when they don't meet their expectations.
I know.
You guys, you know, you've built the following slowly but surely, and you're rewarding your audience for continuing to do it instead of just being like, I'm not seeing like any like big boost, but you probably get those peaks every once in a while where you're like, oh, nice, that's cool.
I'll tell you a funny thing. We've never looked at numbers.
Not once.
I was going to ask. That's going to be my next question, and I'm glad I didn't ask.
We've never looked, right? But, so the guys I work for, the Tell 'Em Steve Dave guys, they're, you know, it's the guys from the show Comic Book Men. And about a year ago, like during the summer in the pandemic, I was trying to figure out how to keep the podcast varied because I didn't want it to be like, we watch this movie and this TV show. We're just inside all the time. Mm-hmm. And when I went to film, I said to the guys who were kind of private, the Tell 'Em Steve Dave guys, they have a huge, crazy, dedicated fan base. Like, they have a super strong Patreon. They make a ton of money on it, and awesome fan base for years. And I was like, will you guys sit down and do one-on-ones with me for my podcast?
Yeah.
And I did 6 one-on-one episodes with those guys, and we released them on our podcast, and a ton of their listeners came over to our podcast. And it's funny, still never looked at numbers, but we get so many write-in emails now that we can't even read them every week.
Yeah. That's a good barometer.
I know.
To see how well you're doing is like if your inbox is flooded, your DMs are flooded.
I think
in a good way. I'm not saying like you know, obnoxious.
Yeah.
I'm just saying like
right.
You got to filter them out and be like, all right, what's going to make the pod?
You know what we say? We'll read every email in the podcast eventually. That's our promise.
Yeah.
Because once in a while we'll be like, we don't have anything this week, and we'll do a whole episode of listener emails.
Yeah.
We know that a bunch of people have listened, started listening because of the emails we started getting, even though we still didn't look at numbers.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, but here's the thing. They're from all over the world. They're not like from East Coast or North America even. They're from like
I would capitalize that 100%. I would be like, I'm going to plan a vacation to wherever my biggest fan is in every continent.
I think...
Is anybody out there living in Antarctica?
Say hello to our Cameroonian listeners.
I think what we really should do that we don't do is we should start doing merch, and we haven't really done it just because it's been like we actually have a design from a guy who's a great guy. He actually works for Mark and Joe too with Tuesdays, but we haven't pulled the trigger on the shirt yet because Brad thinks he doesn't look enough like himself.
That's correct.
Oh, okay.
So it's a diva thing.
Yes.
Okay. So you want to look more like your old self.
By the way, I think
I think you look great.
I made this banner of us.
Yeah.
With pictures of us. And Brad was like, I don't look like myself. It was a picture of him.
Nobody thinks, I don't think I sound, when I listen to my voice, I don't think I sound that. When I see a picture, I go, oh my God, I look like that.
I'll also say, you know, it was a picture that had been toned down, you know, two-toned, black and white. And, what I was told when I was taking the photo, look as serious as possible.
I'm opening the window. That's why I'm up.
And then when it got put on a giant black banner to hang at our shows, I looked like an axe murderer.
Really? See, I think
Chuck's
black
like,
and
that's
white.
Just what you look like. And I'm like, no, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
See, when in doubt, I go black and white. Yeah. So I feel like it masks all the weird shadows. And and it looks like just mysterious.
Yes.
This was more... Like, I guess the negative of black and white. This was white and black.
Right.
Where black was the dominant color and white was... It did not look flattering.
Yeah.
Maybe you just don't look flattering.
I didn't sign off on it, and Chuck had it printed and then put it on magnets and did all
Hold
these
on,
things...
sign off.
Without my permission.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Without me saying, like, I approve of my
That's
face
like,
being used in
what
this
What he's
way.
Saying is, like, right now, if we recorded this podcast and I put it out tomorrow and the next day you were like, I didn't sign off on that. That's what he's using sign off as. Why are we taking the pictures?
First of all, I don't even remember.
It was for promotional art for the podcast.
Sure.
Well, I heard a great quote and maybe this is a meme, not even a quote. I don't even know who made it, but if the way you look at yourself in the mirror,
right.
You know how you go like, oh, I look that's I like the way that angle.
I've never
myself.
Liked it, but yeah, I know well, I know like, looking in the mirror.
But compare it to a photo of yourself. Every time you see a photo of yourself, you're like, I hate that, I want to die.
Backwards.
But then you look at your mirror and you're like, okay, not bad.
Yep.
But that's how you gotta remember, that's how people see you, is mm-hmm. the mirror self, not the photo. Because the photo
I agree.
You're overanalyzing you're looking around every little detail of your face, mm-hmm. picking out every little flaw that you perceive as a flaw.
I agree. And I also think when people see you in real life and you're moving around, it's really, really different than seeing a still photo.
Yes.
It's really, really different when they see the way you talk and the way your mouth moves. Like, we've all, you know, I don't want to sound like a bad guy. We've all seen a picture of someone really attractive.
Yeah.
And then you meet them and the way they talk is disgusting and the way that they move their head and they do things and you're like, this person's... They went from a 10 to a 2 because of motion. You know what I mean? So it might work in the other way, too. Maybe in these pictures, you're a 2. And if someone meets you in real life, you're a 10.
I'd be blessed to be a 2 in the photos that you've approved.
Thumbs up.
Yes.
No! Anyway, let's explain this to the listeners. So, Doug Key.
Yes.
Comic. Also from Rhode Island.
Yeah.
But we really have not crossed paths until a recent documentary project that I was doing with Mark Normand about the Poughkeepsie Show.
Yeah. So I've been opening for Mark for, 5 or 6 years.
Yeah. Real piece of shit. I love him.
Yeah, real piece of shit. Mm-hmm. No, he's very generous, and he's so nervous that he's not going to appear generous. So he was like, he always gives me money for gas if we're driving, doing like long road gigs.
He
always buys lunch. And I think he's,
Same thing here. Yeah.
I think he's scarred from somebody calling him cheap one time. And now he's trying to like make
Thank God.
Yeah. But, you know, just like, you know, clubs in the Northeast, anytime he's doing like either Boston or Providence, or I was living in the Bronx, so he would come and meet me up in the Bronx, and we'd go do like, you know, one nighters in Connecticut or New Jersey or some random place in Pennsylvania.
Right.
And then I saw that you posted something with him, and I was like, oh shit, I think that's another Rhode Island guy.
Yeah. This is what's interesting. We're gonna figure this out on the podcast because this is gonna be fun.
Okay.
All right. My girlfriend's name is Gina.
Mm-hmm.
Her brother's name is Nick.
Yes.
Nick is married to Brittany.
And I grew up with Brittany in the same neighborhood. And we went to elementary school together.
Right. And I went to a show of yours, I think, with Nick and Brittany, Wasted Talent.
Yes, at the Firehouse Theater.
Oh, where Brad did improv.
Where Brad did improv in Newport, Rhode Island.
Because I did do the Wasted Talent show actually at multiple venues.
It was at the Firehouse. It was at the Firehouse.
That's where I first did it. A little BYOB Black Box Theater. Mm-hmm. It was a 90-minute show. People would bring like 30 packs of beer like boxes of wine. I'm like, you alcoholics.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
A lot of tourists coming through Newport, stopping at the Firehouse Theater.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Hence the name Wasted Talent Show.
Yes.
Because the crowd and the talent was waste. I would bring beer for all the comics. And
right.
They would take part.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's so interesting because Brittany used to come to all my shows. You know, when you're new, you invite all your family and friends because you're required to.
Yes.
You don't get on stage.
Right.
So they came to a lot of my early bringer shows.
Yeah. And I went a long time ago because I've been dating Gina for like 8 years. So this is a long time ago that we went, and it's funny because, you know, Brad and I started doing comedy shows. When do you think it was? What year was it?
15, 16?
Maybe 2015 or 16 at the Comedy Connection. We were doing bringers, basically, same thing. And we quickly kind of changed because we were doing live podcasts as well. Like we would take this show and do it live, but we didn't want to just sit at a table live and do like a podcast. We would come up with big segments, like this huge prank. We would, like, I put it this way. Example, there was a guy that was on the show a lot named Eric Maxu. He used to be in my band. And he was kind of a naive guy and a weird guy. And we'd always talk about how he loved his Nana Maxude. He'd be like, my Nana Maxude, she's the best person in the world. So we made up this hypothetical Noni Maxude on his other side that was like an evil version of her. So we did a show live where we brought him on stage. We're like, we know you don't like the Noni Maxude jokes because we did them on the podcast, whatever. He's like, I don't like him. I don't like it. And yeah, he's an idiot. But we were like, we wanted to stop doing Noni Maxude jokes. So we made funeral invitations for Noni Maxude. And we sent them to 100 random addresses across the United States of America with all these confusing and intriguing messages on them. Like one of the, and it was to random people completely. We didn't know them. One of them said, people are saying that Noni's death is a suicide. And that's what you better fucking say too. Like stuff like that. And we would read those live on stage. And it would almost be like kind of like an Impractical Jokers type thing.
Yeah.
But with this controlled way where we get to read it on stage. And we had included an email. So people actually wrote back to us and were like, you know, who is this? What's going on? You know, stuff like that.
That's great.
And so we would do segments like that live for the podcast. We started doing stand-up, but then we gravitated more towards almost a combination of the stand-up and the live podcast. So now the shows that we do at The Connection, when we headline, they'll be like sketches and bits that we come up with. And, you know, we'll work with Brian Bowden.
Yeah.
Ray Harrington, obviously, is kind of our main person we work with.
I mean, Brian is so funny. I mean, he was like one of the Rhode Island guy when I first started. But
sure.
Ray, you know, he moved from Maine right when I started.
Mm-hmm.
And he just became like this, you know, he kind of just took over the scene as far as like being one of the most entertaining comics to watch.
Yeah,
you know, great. Anytime he got on stage, everybody just got in the back and watched because it was never like this, a polished set that he had prepared. It was right. just him going up, just the moment he grabs the mic, he's just like riffing well-structured yeah. new bits with the audience. And yeah. it's just, it's a clinic.
Yeah, he's great. He's so good. And it was cool because we actually, it was funny because it was kind of the Comedy Connection that started us on this yeah. path, because they were like, we want to do a two-man show.
A tag team comedy
night. Tag team comedy night where like everyone teams up. So I think Ray and Brian were the hosts together on stage.
Yes.
And then like close to when the show was coming up, because we had done a bunch of the live podcasts, the Comedy Connection, the club that we perform at in East Providence, Rhode Island, in case we haven't made that clear. They were like, well, you guys headline because you guys do stuff together all the time. So we said, sure. We took one of our bits there and it did really well. And Ray was like, oh, I'm working on this sitcom called Undependent. And he's like, would you want to work on it? Because he knew that I worked with the Tell 'Em Steve Dave guys in New Jersey. And we started working on Undependent. That's how we started working together. And since then, he's literally been on our podcast like 30 times. And he's on just about.
He's so bored. He needs something to do.
Yep.
And I'm not saying that this is, but I'm just saying he needs that creative outlet.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I know he did have a podcast for a little while. And
now he's starting one.
He's starting one. I didn't know if that was out in the,
nah,
air,
who cares?
Out in the air. But I think he did like kind of yeah. elicit towards. Or, yeah. You know.
It's fine. People get it. People know. But, yeah. but he's on like basically all of our live shows as well. But we,
that's a good get.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, yeah. And so, and he's really, you know, putting all of our jokes and insults aside, he's really, really supportive of the very weird stuff we do.
And it's weird.
And I think yeah. that the reason he is supportive is because it's really different and strange. And I think that he appreciates the idea of that, because I think that's where new ideas are going to come from. And kind of something really fun and cool is yeah. going to come from that. We did a show with Ray for our Halloween show last year, or 2 years ago.
Yeah, 2019.
Where we called him on stage. We're like, listen, you're going to come up for our final bit. You have no idea what it is. Called him on stage, and we're like, ladies and gentlemen, like, you know, we want to do something to close the show that was really special, really had to do with Halloween. We thought the movie that encapsulates Halloween the most is Halloween. There's so few characters. There's so few settings. We think it could be done as a stage play. So, ladies and gentlemen, we present to you Chuck and Brad's Halloween with Ray Harrington as Michael Myers. And we just told him what to do. And we did the play of Halloween on stage with him in a Michael Myers mask. But we cut out the face so that you could see Ray's face. So you could still see him. But we did the whole thing.
I'm just, you know, Michael Myers is always just staying behind doors.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just picturing
yeah.
Ray and like the door's just not all the way.
That's what,
back.
You know what yeah. it is? It's we had a big sheet of a black sheet where like Michael Myers retreats to the shadows and he goes behind it, but his head is, and he's like, your shadows are too short.
Oh,
you know, because that's part of it is that he gets to
yeah,
kind of riff with
yeah,
it.
God,
but
so
we
funny.
Do these really weird things with him. And so that's kind of our relationship to the comedy, you know, to the Rhode Island comedy scene. With Corey and Dave, who own The Connection, they've been really supportive of just letting us headline and do whatever we want. And
oh,
Ray
yeah,
and helpful
care.
And stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're like, as long as you bring people in.
Yeah, as long as your people are going to
make
get
them
drunk
laugh.
And
yeah.
buy mozzarella sticks.
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
but that's been our relationship.
We did that that weird snuff show where we murdered someone on stage, and Corey and Dave were like,
whoa, go
two,
on.
Two thumbs up.
Yeah, they're counting their mozzarella
yeah,
stick
they don't
box,
care.
And they're like,
you know what's weird? They were just counting mozzarella sticks.
Yes.
And I'm like, how does that help?
Yes.
They're like, this is Providence. We've seen a lot worse.
But it's funny because we do this stuff. Then I get to go work with the Tell 'Em Steve Dave guys, which is really cool. It's all video stuff. And I host a show on their Patreon as well, another podcast.
Yeah.
Which is that show I told you about earlier, the one-on-ones.
Okay.
It did really, really well. Got a huge response on like social media and Reddit, all this stuff. So we pulled it over to their Patreon. It's one of their shows now.
Okay.
But I'm still the host, which
awesome.
Is great. And then, you know, more recently, started working with Mark.
Yeah.
Heard Mark talk about you, and I was like, this guy's been kind of hovering around my radar, because whenever I talk to Nick and Brittany
yeah.
about the comedy we're doing, because they come to our shows too, they know Ray as well. It's always like, you know, they've always mentioned like our friend Doug Key. We've seen him a million times, another Rhode Island guy, but we've never talked through these mutual people or in the scene around us. It took
right.
us going to Poughkeepsie.
Yeah.
Me
I know.
Doing a documentary, you being the feature. And that's when we started talking,
like
a month and a half ago
and
or 2 months ago.
I think we have a bright future ahead.
I think
we're
going to
be working together.
Yeah, I think we
and
have a lot of stuff.
I'm so excited that you got to record my first album and special
mm-hmm.
eventually. So
yeah,
this
past weekend.
Yeah, that was it was super fun, and you're a pro, and
Woo.
And so is Brian.
Yep, Brian Lau helping
yeah.
out.
So I can't wait to see how that turns out. You just showed me a few clips, and it's way better than I anticipated. This was an impulsive decision. I was like, I'm opening for Mark. He's got 6 sold-out shows. I have no choice. I have to do this now.
Yes.
I have to.
Yes. You know? So I work for Mark Norman and Joe List, the 2 comics, and we do a series called Hot Gay Sets, where I follow them around. We do documentary video episodes.
They don't know their podcast. That sounds
very
erotic.
Yeah. Well, even if you do know it's a podcast,
it still sounds very erotic.
Yeah.
Right.
But we do documentary, it'll be like a half hour, 45 minutes documentaries about what they're doing, you know, whether it's going to Poughkeepsie and doing a show, or whether it's Mark going to LA and doing like, you know, Marin's podcast and Bobby Lee's and Whitney Cummings podcast, whatever it is. And what happened was Mark was coming to our home club, the Comedy Connection. And I was going to do the Hot Gay Sets, and Doug was going to feature. So Doug reached out to me and said, hey, will you film all my feature sets and we'll make it into a special? And I said, hell yeah. And we did that this past weekend.
We did.
It was a lot of fun. I think it worked out really well. I think it's cool because I've never really done like a full thing like this. And there are other ones in the works with some RHs that we know. I don't know if I should say anything.
Yeah.
Of like this kind of stuff. But it was cool to be like, let's mic the audience. Let's do this. Let's get a floating audience camera and really set up like a nice solid shoot for it. And I think it went really super well.
Yeah, it was beyond I knew that you filmed Mark's set. So I was like, all right, he's going to have at least a couple cameras there. So maybe he can just hit record and maybe we can get some sound into the board. And the way that you just had the floating cam, the 3 camera setup, the 2 boom mics on the stage, the lav mic, the soundboard. And then like, you know, we filmed like intros and outros and you got B-roll and, I feel like I should have prepared a little better.
No, it was perfect. That was great. I think you did great.
As an audience member who was there with no responsibilities other than to watch and enjoy the sets, good stuff.
Oh, thank you. I liked it.
I thought it was very funny.
Yeah.
Loose tooth.
That's one of my favorite jokes you got.
Oh, that's brand new.
It's great.
One of my hardest things is figuring out how I'm going to open my sets.
Yeah.
And that's
been
for the last decade. I'm just like, what am I going to open with? Like, I have my set. I just never know what's going to like get the credit. If I'm on the road, I'll do something local about that town.
Yeah.
But when I'm in Rhode Island, I feel like they can sniff out that I'm from there already. So it's, I can't go like, hey, what's up with this town? It's you're from here.
Yeah, right. No, you totally.
Concertus
pizza is overrated. No, I like Concertus. I do like it.
People charge the stage. punch him.
he gets torched.
But I figured like if it's an album, usually when you like listen to an album, it's like, hey, what's up Cincinnati? What's up Phoenix? And I figured I would do like, hey, Providence. And then just talk about the state.
Sure.
You know, just for like 30 seconds and that how nobody remembers Rhode Island is like a real state.
Well, that's what was good about it is that it was sort of regional, but not regional enough.
Right.
Where someone that's not from here wouldn't get it.
Right. If you're listening to it in, you know, Albuquerque, New Mexico, you're going to be like, oh, yeah, Rhode Island. That's right. And then it's going to be funny because they might have forgotten that it exists.
I don't know if they're going to forget it exists, but everyone knows it's the smallest state.
Yeah.
So that's why the stuff I think is easily accessible.
Yeah.
But I did want to talk to you about, how did we miss each other these past many years doing all this stuff? Which
I lived in New York and you were here. So I was in New York from 2014 to 2020.
So when did you start comedy?
2009. I took a class at Catch a Rising Star, which is not there anymore.
Who taught that class?
Frank O'Donnell. He's like a Rhode Island comic.
He's a staple. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's a legend. And he did this comedy boot camp. Frank O'Donnell's comedy boot camp, and because I'm from Newport, and there was no comedy scene in Newport.
Newport,
small
Rhode
island.
Yeah.
Whoa! As the resident improv group.
Sorry, no stand up comedy. Yeah, there was improv comedy ish, and
that accurately describes us.
I never had any desire to do improv, but I used to be obsessed with stand up, and I used to just write in notebooks all the time, and I filled up notebook after notebook full of material before
like Eminem.
I started. Yeah, yeah, but
I
it was just
say,
horrible.
Like the guy from Seven.
I think I was John Doe.
Yes. I'm picturing Rabbit.
It was just the 7 deadly sins on each page over and over again. What's the deal with gluttony?
I went to an open mic with What's the Deal with Gluttony? Didn't go over well.
What's the deal with Mom's Spaghetti?
Yes.
Yeah, so I was pretty sloth-like for years and didn't start comedy. And then I saw that ad in the paper in like the local rag. It wasn't even like the main paper. And it was like Frank O'Donnell's comedy boot camp. And I emailed him and I was like, hey, I'm a student, because he said there's a student discount. I was going to community college, so whatever. I just played that card.
You're a student, sure.
And he's like, all right, great. I'll give you this discount. It's, you know, once a week for 9 weeks. And there was only 4 people in my class. I had to go up there every Tuesday to catch Rising Star at Twin River Casino, which is like, if you don't know Twin River, it's a shitty casino in like Lincoln, Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. And it was only video at the time. It's just filled with smoke. I have asthma. It was horrible. So I went in there.
A lot of elderly folks.
A lot of elderly folks. Yeah. Yep. A lot of depends. So I'd go there, and it was great because there was four people in my class. It was very intimate. So Frank, you, first of all, you can't teach anybody how to be funny. No. That's like an innate thing. You're either funny or you're not. And right. But what this class teaches you is just the etiquette of, you know, how to structure a joke, how to be a good business professional off stage, how to move the mic stand behind you if you take the mic out of the stand. not just this like eyesore right in front of you that the audience keeps focusing on. Just like dumb little things that that you see over and over again with new comics that just are learning organically. So I took that class, and the graduation ceremony, as you know, most classes is you invite all of your family and friends. Yeah. It's a way to obviously get money. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest, a lot of older comics who stop doing it, they have the skill, they have the experience, so they're like, why not? I can teach somebody these like easy 101 lessons.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But they're making a few bucks because you get to invite all your friends and they get a cut at the door or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I invited like 25 of my friends, and I did 15 minutes my first set.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because there was only four people in my class. Yeah.
Right.
And he was like, yeah, just go, whatever. So I did 15 and it felt great. I recorded it. And then my second show ever was like a month later at Jimmy Saloon, Maya Mannion's comedy night. Mm-hmm. And it was like during like a Bruins playoff game.
Nice.
And I just remember people were just like, get off the stage. They're like, boo.
Yeah.
I was so wasted. I had two shots of Jaeger, like six Budweisers. I just didn't even make sense. And it was like hyperventilating into a bag afterwards.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
That's the beauty of comedy is, you know, you do well your first time. And you're like, oh, I think I have a future in this.
Yep.
And it motivates you to do it again. Then you do your second show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you're humbled. And then you're like, I have to redeem myself. So I have to do this again.
Comedy
so it's
revenge.
This vicious cycle.
Comedy revenge. I like that.
So that was my, how I started comedy from.
That's really interesting. So that's around 2009, 2010, let's say.
2009. And then, I probably did my second set in like early 2010. And then, you know, I did a lot of the contests at the casino.
Yeah.
You know, there was one contest.
So it's interesting. So you're kind of, hovering more towards like Southern Rhode Island. That's what's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it because that's where you live. But for me, you know, loving comedy and like growing up around here, I always was going to The Connection, to the Wilbur, to Nick's Comedy Stop. I was always going up to Boston and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, for a long time when I started, there was like a big beef between Boston and Rhode Island.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You'd never heard about this?
I don't really think about that. No, I don't know.
I don't think it was like maybe a physical beef or anything like that. It was just kind of like a, you know,
like a roast beef.
The Boston scene thought that Rhode Island was a bunch of like club hacks, you know, hey, what do you do, buddy? Hey, well, you know, you know, bread rolls, mozzarella, you know, like kind of like the crowd worky, no structured material, going off the rails. And then the Rhode Island guys kind of like thought Boston had like that kind of Harvard Square snarkiness to it.
Yeah, interesting.
You know, kind of like couldn't really handle themselves in club rooms and vice versa. So there was this weird tension anytime like a Rhode Island guy did a Boston room or a Boston guy did a Rhode Island room.
That's so funny.
But then when I started a Wasted Talent show, and I used to do a lot of mics in Boston too. So I would meet so many funny comics.
Yeah.
You know, like Gary Peterson, Matt D, Jenny Zagrino, so many funny Boston comics. And they would come down to Newport and do the Wasted Talent show, which is in Rhode Island.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like there was a lot of like, I don't know, intermingling with the scene there. And I think now it's fine. Now nobody says anything.
Right.
But for a while, there was a weird like Biggie Tupac thing going on.
Like That's
in,
so funny.
In the same region.
That's so funny. I think that happens with all like art scenes, right? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like even with music, with all this stuff, there's always going to be some bullshit rivalry.
There's got to be like barriers that say, we're part of this group.
Yeah.
And sometimes you create those barriers by saying, well, we're not part of that group.
Yeah.
And you just make it up. So you have a sense of belonging.
Yeah. I mean, that wasn't just Rhode Island, but that was kind of like alt comedy versus club comedy.
That was also
just like a general thing. But those were the two closest scenes of opposing styles.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
That's really funny. So when did you decide to move to New York and why?
I was doing comedy 4 years in Rhode Island. I had Corey and David moved me up to feature at the club.
At the Comedy Connection.
still a feature, which I'm totally fine with. I love it. It's, you know, I also have a day job. So it's like a lot of people are like, oh, if I'm not a headliner by this time, I'm going to quit and kill myself. Like, I'm not going to. I enjoy doing it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Feature
spot's the best spot on the show right now anyway.
I think that the democratization of like creativity over the past like 15 years has really changed expectations for what you do, because like, you know, for us, like, you know, we do a podcast, we do our live comedy shows, I do all this filmmaking stuff, I write and I do all these different things. And it's weird because in every one of those situations, it's like, well, do I want to be this? Do I want to be this? Am I not this? And it's weird because you kind of, as time goes on, you kind of realize you can live a life of like, well, it's an amalgam of all the things I like to do. And it's an amalgam of all the stuff that I like. And it's different than I think maybe it was like 30 years ago, where I think people were just like, this is what I do and this is it. You know what I mean? A little different.
Of course. But, you know, I never wanted to just give up. And I knew that if I wanted to take comedy seriously, I had to move to New York.
Yeah.
I had to do that thing. So I felt like I had, you know, built this feature set. I had like a half hour worth of material at least. And I was like, I'm going to move to New York because that's just what you do. And I was good with starting over. I knew I was going to have to start over in New York.
Right.
Nobody knows who you are. You're nobody. Your act sucks. Yeah. You find out that, you know, 16 comics are doing, you know, half your act already.
Right.
So you have to throw it all out.
Your mozzarella sticks jokes don't fly.
It's done. It's gone. It's gone. It had 86 the mozzarella stick joke.
So, don't 86 the mozzarella sticks. I'm hungry. But 86 the mozzarella stick jokes.
Right. So
nobody in New York knows who Buddy Cianci is.
Nobody.
Anyway, you know, unless when you go into Corey and Dave's office and they're counting their mozzarella sticks and you hear crickets and you're like, shit.
This usually kills.
He looks at his notebook and it's all Corey and Dave jokes. And he's like, oh my
this
God.
Kills in Corey and Dave's club. What the hell's going on
just,
here?
Just flops.
I'm just doing back of the room material to Rhode Island scene.
Anyway, Ray Harrington didn't fit behind the curtain, right, guys? Can I tell you? Wait, what? Oh, what? No one's laughing.
I did a roast battle in New York at the Stand one time.
Against who?
Against Brian Glowacki. So here's the deal. He's a Massachusetts comic. Didn't even live in New York.
Yeah, I know he doesn't.
He was supposed to roast a friend of mine that lived in New York at the time. So at least it was one New York guy.
Yeah.
My New York friend had to bail. He's like, do you want to roast Brian Glowacki?
Yeah.
I'm not a roast guy, but I was like covering him last minute. I'm like, let me just give it a shot.
Sure.
What's the worst that can happen?
Yeah.
Oh, the worst that can happen is the roast was so bad that the judges couldn't crown a winner, and they gave the title to the DJ who played like the womp womp sound effects after. It was so bad.
Were your roast jokes bad?
They were. It was just okay. So the roast scene is like, it's a scene.
Yeah.
It's like a bunch of comics that they're roasters. They go and watch whatever. Nobody knew who I was.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knew who my opponent was. So there was no, like, nobody knew any of the dirt.
That's what's tough about roasts is like when you see the celebrity roasts, they hit on the stuff that is public knowledge. And when you got two guys that you don't know, it's like, how are you going to pull stuff?
Yeah.
It's like, if you guys don't know, this guy's mom died in a horrific car accident. So that's where we're going to go tonight, which is really weird. Yeah. It's like, what do you do? You know what I mean? Yeah. It's tough. It's really tough.
It was so funny because like Michael Che was a judge.
Yeah.
And I knew him before SNL, before Daily Show, all that. And he goes, I don't know. I guess I'll give this one to Doug, whatever, just because of that one joke. And then Rich Voss was another judge.
Yeah.
He was like, a he's hard.
Yeah, he is.
He was just like, you know his name? He's like, you got to forget his name. Oh, that was sad.
Yeah, that's drunk. Funny.
But yeah, I did open mic. I didn't work for like 10 months. I just did open mics every single night in 2014 when I moved there. And
wow.
I felt I got a lot better. I got my chops up. I came back to Rhode Island and did, you know, shows at the club. And I just felt like, I'm like, oh, it does work.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
Because you bomb so much in New York. So you get so comfortable with bombing.
Yeah.
Which is like such a skill. And a unknown skill that people don't realize you have to do.
Yeah,
you can't just like get good in a bubble. If you're like a headliner in Rhode Island or wherever in some second city, you have to be good with starting over and bombing a lot. But a lot of people, they're good with being the big fish in a small pond. They're fine. They want to live there.
Yeah.
More power to you.
Yeah.
But if you want to take it to the next level, you got to go and
expand.
You know, and expand and eat your dick for a few years.
That's funny, man. That's funny. So you're in the Bronx for a little bit. It's funny, though, because I wonder still, 2009 to 2014, it's just weird that we never crossed over. When were you doing stand-up? When were you doing improv at Newport, Brad?
2007 to March of 2009.
Yeah.
Oh, so wow. So the next day after you stopped, that's when Doug started. at the firehouse.
The cycle of
you
life.
Know what? I'll say much of the improv group left at the same time, so maybe that freed up some slots.
They had a big falling out with the owners of the firehouse.
Yeah.
Are you still good with them, Doug?
Wait, who did?
Are you?
My improv group fell out with the owners.
Oh,
the
well, I think the owners, they were like an old married couple. I think they just left it to some, you know, to another guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, they're gone. They were a little prickly to my crowd. They would always run the door, which was a little annoying because it was my show.
Yeah.
And it was cash only. So they were doing all the transactions. I'm like, I'm like, I prefer if I kind of had, you know, somebody yeah. there doing it. But anyway, it's their theater and they were yeah. letting me, you know.
Yeah, they were stealing from Brad's improv group.
Too. Oh, really?
You know, there were some financial irregularities.
I don't want to
throw them under the bus.
That's the nicest way to not accuse somebody of fucking you over.
Here's the deal. Number one, we never knew how much tickets cost, ever. And like, people would show up and not know. And they'd say, you know, so people show up. The owners say, oh, it's $20. And they're like, oh, like Brad told me it was $5. They'd be like, okay, it's $5.
Yeah.
And that was it. And it was just that. And so we had no idea. They said, all right.
Can I make a quick little thing about that?
Yes, of course.
I think that they were dealing with the Newport crowd. And like a lot of people who are walking around Newport that yep. live there would be like, oh, $25 for a ticket. Who cares?
Yeah.
And so they were trying to take advantage of that.
Yes.
But the people in the improv group were trying to bring in their friends as well, where they're not going to pay $25 to see their friends do improv.
And and then it was... We want to start filming. We want to buy a camera for the group. And they were like, no, we have a camera. And it was like a 480p webcam.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay, this isn't exact. Like, we can't put clips up if they're not good clips.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of frustration.
Yeah, they hired me to film. Remember that whole debacle?
Not really.
Oh, they hired me to film a little bit, but then they were like, oh, your girlfriend has to pay $25 to come with you.
Oh, yes. I do remember that debacle.
Oh, dude, it was fucking crazy.
We left really over artistic differences of them saying, we want to continue doing short form improv. And we as performers saying, we want to expand. We want to do long form improv. We don't want to keep doing the same stuff.
Yeah.
And it came to a head. There were interpersonal conflicts as well. And, you know, I resigned the group. Like at the board meeting, but my ride was still had yet to speak. And so I was like, I resigned my position on the board effective immediately. And then realized I can't just sit in this meeting. I'm like, I'll be at Dunkin' Donuts. And I got up and left.
What were the personal differences? You don't have to get into the specifics.
It was
people that were kind of in a different camp than you. Because the people that left, let me just get this right.
Yep.
We're like kind of all together. They were the friends of the group,
yes.
And they're the people who wanted to go in a new direction. Is
yes.
that right?
Yes.
There was this guy I fucking hated in that group.
That's all right.
And he stole some money from Brad. And Brad's like, he just thinks it's more financial to get irregularities.
It was. Yeah. It was. So that was group two, not related to the Firehouse Theater, but we had $1,700 in an account. And we're like, hey, you were in charge of the account. What happened to that money? And he's like, oh, I think your director signed it out. And we're like, no, she didn't. He's like, oh, you know what? The bank told me that if there was no movement on the account, they would just seize the money. And I'm like, it's not how banks work. And now I'm not friends with him on Facebook, so I have no idea.
Yeah. I hate that when that guy came in. Let's just call him New Jim. I fucking hated that guy. I hated him. His name really is New Jim. Well, I mean, not his birth certificate name. I'm sure that'd be weird. Yeah. Although it would be new.
Yeah.
Anyway, I hated this guy right away. He was a fucking asshole, piece of shit. I fucking hate him. He would go to karaoke and he'd bring a sleeve of harmonicas and he'd play harmonica instead of actually singing the songs.
Oh no, he'd sing. And then the solos, he would bring out the harmonica.
Come on, that's a villain in a movie, that right?
Yeah.
It's fucking crazy. And then he stole that money from you.
As far as I know.
Sorry.
Money was
unless the bank stole it.
Also,
so
yeah, definitely.
He was an improv guy too?
Yes, he was.
Oh, man.
So I didn't know any stand-up guys, and I assumed
as if I already didn't have enough reason to hate improv people. I'm kidding.
It's all right.
I'm kidding. No, you're great.
There are some improv people.
And I did take an improv class, so I, you know.
I feel like all improv people are either teddy bears like Brad or like the devil.
Yeah, I will say it was a good.
There's some middle ground.
There's good people. I will say that.
Jimmy Sorrell's a great guy.
Teddy bear.
Jimmy.
Yeah.
Teddy bear.
Titty bear or teddy bear?
He goes to the titty bar, but he's a teddy bear.
I don't think he goes to the titty bar. For a while I was like, oh, stand-up comics like don't support each other and improv people do. And then, you know, when we started trying to do stand-up and working,
the
stand-up community has been, like, they've been super cool to us.
Yeah. Stand-up is far different. I know so many stand-ups who can never be improv people. And
yes.
I was talking about myself. Because I took UCB 101 when I moved to New York, just you know, because I was there, and I'm like, I want to have this skill, and I just did it to learn, you know, it was like an exercise,
you can meet people, like a lot of
the
good
camaraderie
benefits.
In improv is so supportive and so friendly, and we went out for drinks and tacos after, and it was great, and I'm still friends with them to this day from from that one class, not even like a troupe that I've been doing for years, you know, so. But yeah, just the stand-up scene, it's like everyone, it's every man for himself, and it's very cynical and dark, but I don't know, it's all individual.
See, it's so funny, so we got into like doing comedy, and like, you know, if I'm being completely honest, from doing music, live comedy, podcasting, filmmaking, and writing,
yeah,
I just feel like everyone thinks I'm an imposter everywhere I go.
Yes.
So that's how I feel. But when I started doing comedy,
I went to your family Christmas. They weren't sure who you were.
When I went to, I started doing like comedy, you know, talking to Ray. Ray Harrington was really pushing me, and like, he's like, you know, he's like, people don't work together. He's like, we're all on separate pirate ships. He was a complete piece of shit. And then like, we work with him like on everything all the time for the past 3 weeks. For every like 2 or 3 weeks, we do something with him for like 4 years now. Yeah. So I'm like, I don't know, Ray. I don't know if he's being accurate, but I hear it. I hear it. It's tough. I mean, with actual, here's the thing. It's because comedy has become so diversified in terms of the stuff that you do. Like, even if you think of Normand, who's super successful, but the truth is, like, in terms of his career, how much of his time is just stand up and how much of it is the other stuff too now, mm-hmm. which is a lot of other stuff. Yeah. We're making documentaries and podcasts and this video and this. So, you know, in stand up, that's kind of one thing. And I guess it's true. But now it's like, because comics are so, they have to do so many other things too.
Yeah.
It's almost like that becomes a part of it. And they kind of have to be a little bit more of team players because they do all these other projects.
Yeah.
I think.
No, you're right. And I don't know. I think you have, like, stand up used to be the bread and butter.
Yeah.
And now it's secondary to the other thing that mm-hmm. you're trying to grow. And like, you're like, all right, my stand up has plateaued. So now I need something else to, you know, break that ceiling.
Yeah. And it's interesting because you got to think of someone like Maron, mm-hmm. who did hit a ceiling with stand up, did kind of not connect to a wide audience with stand up, turned to podcasting, has this insane podcast, but then did stand up just as hard and found that audience through the podcast. And his stand up is incredible. Mm-hmm. His comedy is awesome. And those people really love it and connect to it. So even though he did kind of have to take a left turn, he kind of continued the comedy and he found a new audience for the comedy.
Right.
You know, which is really, really an interesting thing. And I do think it's, you know, it's part of it. Part of being a traveling performer, whether it's comedy,
clown.
Music.
You said clown wrong.
Well, partly whether it's stand-up, music, or whatever, the idea of doing stuff that can be digested by everyone all the time, no matter where they are, is different. Because mm-hmm. like, even if you're like a very popular comedian, you know, you're not going to do the same market more than maybe twice a year, right?
Right.
So if someone in Boston is like, my favorite comic is Joe. No, man, let's not use Boston and Joe List because that's a little different. But let's say you're in Milwaukee and you're like, my favorite comic is Joe List, and you're out of town the weekend he's coming. Then you miss him. And that's your relationship. You know, a couple of years ago, maybe 15 years ago, your relationship to that comic might fade because of that.
Yeah.
Now, if you're like,
good point.
Well, I listen to his podcast every week, so I'm still in tune with his voice. I'm still in tune with what he's doing. You're not just waiting for the next time he comes around or the next special, which could be 2 years in between.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I think it.
And that relationship builds tenfold when you're listening to them every single week and you build
that,
like, you know, one-way relationship with them where you feel like, oh, they're my friend. I'm listening to them every week. They're talking to them, you know, but then you talk to them in real life and he's like, who are you? Get away from me.
Well, it's funny too, because like, let's say you're into someone a long time ago, like Mitch Hedberg or Dane Cook or whoever, and you hear their comedy and it's polished and it's funny and it's an hour of this. And then 2 years later, it's an hour of this. Now you might be like, oh, I just heard a story where this guy got carjacked. I just heard this person got married and how much they cried at their wedding. And I think you get a deeper investment into these people that you would normally kind of just see from the performer's level. Now you get a little bit more insight and I think you care more about them.
Yeah.
Which is really, it's an interesting thing. It's a really interesting world. I mean, even the guys, so the guys I work for, tell them Steve Dave, in New Jersey, one of them is Walt Flanagan and he was on Comic Book Men, this reality show.
Yeah.
Very light, very fluffy, very fun, just joking around.
Gabriel Iglesias?
Yeah, yeah. Yes. And he, you know, he was in Kevin Smith's movies. He's friends with Kevin Smith. Then the podcast started, and a lot of their podcast is fun and funny. This past weekend, he did a podcast for Tell 'Em Steve Dave, and it's the first time I heard Walt cry on the podcast.
Yeah.
Wow. And it was all about how his daughter went missing last weekend.
Holy shit.
For one night. And she's like, I guess she's like very, very good at communicating. And she just went completely, you know, no communication one night. And he found out that she lied about where she was and she was just missing. And he told the story and he cried on the podcast.
Always got to share your location with your kids.
Well, that's the thing. So she did share the location.
Oh,
and but the thing is that when the phone turns off, I guess it stays where it was.
Oh, really?
And it was like,
I thought it's one of those things with batteries still in it that it's, you gotta like,
I think the GPS is probably too powerful for that. I know what you mean. You're talking about like a clock would still run, but I don't know if GPS would still work. But they couldn't get her after a certain point in time. But I mean, they found her. Everything's fine. But he told the story in the podcast, and it's harrowing. And for sure, that kind of stuff makes the people who like you get way more invested personally into who you are.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting part of all this behind-the-scenes stuff and this constant, you know, even stuff like Tuesdays with Stories, which is mostly funny and fun and bouncy. Yeah. Even that, like talking about, oh, I did this this week. Oh, I did this. And we did this. All that stuff. It still, I think, makes people more invested personally.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting new world. It's funny because I never really thought I'd be so ingrained in it that it was like my career and life. Right. But like all the money I make is basically from Patreon. It's crazy. and it's from this new side of performers.
Yeah.
And this new like, you know, people who are fans really strong, you know, strongly connecting with.
They're only fans.
They're only fans.
Yes.
Man, I can't believe when OnlyFans tried to not do porn and then they did do porn. Someone brought up like, do you remember what happened with this or no?
Yeah, they said they were going to ban adult content.
And then like 2 days later, they switched it.
Oh, they would have lost most of their platform, yeah. If not 95%, right?
Here's a question. Could it have been just a thing to be in the news and boost their visibility? Because how many people were talking about that?
Right.
And they reversed it so quickly that it seemed like it wasn't that important they weren't that strong on the stance.
Yeah.
I remember reading, you know, one of the reasons behind it was that one of the major credit card processing firms was taking steps to distance itself from anything inappropriate with, you know, underage content. And that includes live streaming. So OnlyFans can verify the age of, you know, Chuck, who has the account. Right. But then old underage Brad shows up, dances around. Yeah. On one of Chuck's live streams, just in the background. I'm just dancing around in the background.
I'd pay for that.
Yeah.
I mean, you of age, yeah, pretending like...
Right, yeah. Pretending to be
underage. I'd go with the underage, yes. Brad. That seems like it'd be a better investment.
So the word was that OnlyFans was like, I don't... it's on a camera that you have to crank.
Hello, my honey. Hello, my darling.
Is it a zoetrope?
What do you have to wear for that dance? What kind of hat is that? I never had one.
It's a propeller beanie. the idea of OnlyFans didn't want to like have trouble with their credit card processors, so yes. they said they were going to do this, and then they were like, "Well, we're going to have more trouble if we don't allow this adult content, so we're going to continue." But the idea of it being, "Let's get our names in the news," that does make sense.
Oh yeah,
well, because it was so short. Because it's not even like they were like, we took a week of deliberation and thought about it. It had to be like a 48-hour, 72-hour maybe turnaround on this huge stance. Like, I don't know. It just seemed kind of suspect now that I think about
it. Yeah, my friend, she's, this girl, that's she was on the show 90 Day Fiancé. Her name's like Stephanie. I don't know her last name. But she had started an adult content type paywall site called Unfiltered. And she... like was trying to promote it and get it off the ground, something like OnlyFans before that whole scandal thing. And then when that happened, she was like, "See, I told you this was going to happen to OnlyFans." And then she got like a ton of new subscribers to her to her Unfiltered site, whatever. And so now she's doing great because like that put more eyes on her because people were searching for other ways to make money.
Well, that's the thing with OnlyFans, Patreon. There's always going to be someone who's like, well, how can I do this a little bit better?
Right.
And some people are going to sign up for that new thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, we've all thought about it.
Yeah.
Just me? No.
Well, maybe Brad.
I was like, I could sell pictures of my feet.
Yeah.
I don't think they're attractive feet.
You could for like a circus.
No, feet's done. You got to corner a different market, like nape of neck something.
Brad could do feet, but only for people who are fans of circus oddities.
Yes.
Yeah. Like bearded lady, Brad's feet.
The naked Sasquatch. Like something like that.
Yeah. Rear armpit crease.
Yes.
You got to corner that market.
You know what's funny? We said we're going to do some listener emails, and I think that it'd be smart to do a couple just so
they're all about. You know what I mean? What do you think? Content.
What do you think?
Yeah. I think there's like five or six emails. It feels like all of them.
We got more today.
All right. All of them were relatively short.
Yeah.
Okay. Are there questions that your fans ask?
They just write in. They say whatever they want. So let's see what this guy says. Sequel Productions. I know this guy. I think it's Matt Bonta, I think. All right. Hey, guys. Just wanted to add another facet to your conversation from the previous episode. Let's see. Michael Jackson as a musician, Bill Cosby as a comedian, etc. They are held to a lifetime of content that can be judged solo. He's talking about like solo artists.
Yeah, we had been talking about the idea of what do you do with the art when the artist does something despicable, or
like Cosby.
What if you, you know, have heard bad things about the artist and then you check out their art and you're like, oh, it's really good.
Yeah. But what about people like Kevin Spacey, who was in a movie called Gore that will never see the light of day? Beyond it being a Kevin Spacey film, what about all the actors in it, their work, and all the people who put in the work behind the scenes? It's a whole other facet of that conversation. Entire cast and crew of a film that people put time and work into is now just gone. Just another aspect of conversation. Thanks again, guys. Matt.
Well, they get paid up front, probably, right?
They get paid, yeah. But
they don't
I mean,
get the residuals or anything.
Well, I would say, you know, sometimes, you know, you do things and some of it is pay. Some of it is like, yeah. You know, you do the work. So
well,
that it
Louis
gets out
had
there.
A big movie that came out. I forgot what it was called with Chloe.
Grace Moretz.
Yeah. And that never aired.
Yeah.
That was in black and white.
Yeah, it was in black and white. Oh, Brad. See, Brad?
Yep. There's a market for me.
Yeah, that's a weird thing. I think about that all the time. I think about the idea of like, well, how many people suffer because this person should suffer or something? Yeah. You know what I mean? In someone's mind. And I wonder about the idea of like, okay, let's say like Louis is like the star of that everything. What if he had a cameo and it was like, oh man, we're going to shelve this movie that everyone is in.
Right.
Although I guess they could do the Chris D'Elia thing. Did you hear about that with Army of the Dead?
So, okay. That was the movie. I saw it air. I'm like, oh, I thought Chris D'Elia was supposed to be in this.
So it's crazy. You know Tig Notaro?
Yeah.
She was not in the filming at all. They filmed her all on a green screen and inserted her later.
I haven't seen the movie yet, but I heard it's pretty fun.
The movie's wicked fun, but I think it was really fun. But I think that there's some scenes with Tig Notaro where it is like mind-shattering that she wasn't there filming and they filmed it later. Like,
really?
Like you see it. And it's cool, too, because on YouTube now, even if you just want to check it out, if you look up like Tig Notaro green screen, it shows you all the scenes and how they did it, like the actual company produced it, and it's incredible. I can't believe that they were able to pull it off to this level. There's one scene where she's talking to Dave Bautista, who is the lead, and the camera is a handy cam, so it's moving as they're walking down a hallway, and she's talking to them, and it's insane that it was filmed separately, right?
Yes,
you saw that. It's mind blowing. You would never know. It's crazy.
That's so crazy because Tig Notaro or Chris D'Elia looks like the Pokemon evolution of Tig Notaro.
Right. Yeah.
They just got like a smaller female version of him.
It's also kind of a weird. I mean, how was he in that movie? It just seems such a weird person.
How about the fact that he played in that show You on Netflix? He played a pedophile.
I know.
Or something.
He did.
Never seen it, but I heard.
No, he did. I don't know.
That's weird.
I got to be honest. I'm not really sure about the Chris D'Elia thing. Like, is he a pedophile?
Well, he was grooming young women via DM on social media. Women. Girls who had in their, like, bios, like, you know, 15.
Yeah.
I go to this high school, whatever. Yeah. So, like, it was objectively, like, the girls saying, like, I'm underage. And I guess there were screenshots of him.
I thought it was actually
asking to hang out and all that stuff.
I thought it was the opposite of that. I thought it was that when they said that he didn't talk to them anymore, and that's kind of why this is like contended.
There's probably mixed.
Yeah,
stories.
I know. Who knows? Who knows?
And I'm not sure. I mean, this is old news now.
Yeah.
So it's
it's old news. I'm just. I don't really know because I saw someone fairly notable kind of flip flop. They were first really against him, and then they're like, "Wait a minute, did anyone look at what actually happened?" And they were like, "He didn't do anything wrong." And I was like, "Oh, I actually." I don't really know exactly.
Yeah,
what
I don't know. I remember seeing there was like girls that posted screenshots because they're older now.
Yeah,
they're
me too.
They're out of age now and they like saved their old thing. Whatever.
Yeah, right.
Anyway. You know,
it's weird. Cancel. All right, next email. Subject, 1 year anniversary from Anthony. Hey, Chuck and Brad, just noticed I've been listening to the show for a little over a year now. We're in it for the long haul, boys.
Yes.
I've also been going through a rough time, so the podcast has been a bright spot in my days. I look like a madman laughing to myself on my daily walks. I also wanted to say I appreciate both of you guys' vulnerability.
Ah.
I'm a bit of a closed-off person. I'm working on it. And I've always admired that trait in people. I hope you're doing well. Can't wait to hear what Ohio was all about.
Oh,
thank you.
Still under an NDA.
Yes. Chuby for life.
Wow.
We call our fans, because Chuck and Brad, Chubracabras.
Uh-huh.
But
okay.
It's too long, so Chubies for short.
I like Chubies.
Yeah, Chubies.
All right. Well, Chuby for life. I hope your life shapes up.
Yeah, man. Sounds almost like a come on,
shape up your life,
shape up,
get your act together.
Yes.
No, we just did a big podcast because I got this big opportunity to go to Ohio. I told you about it, the shoot that I did that I can't really talk about on the podcast.
Sure.
And we'll talk about it as soon as we can. But I'll say this: I'll give a little tidbit. How about this? The person that hired me is really high up in the industry. Love this guy,
Bill Cosby
or gal. Hey, I'm not going to say it is or isn't Cosby. But anyway, I'm getting paid in Jell-O pudding.
Yes.
No, it's someone high up in the industry.
I got paid in one glass of wine. I don't remember what happened after that.
I was actually really nervous that I didn't know if I did a good enough job for what this project is for, which is a very big TV network. And he wrote me the other day an email. Subject line was capital, loving. And then the actual
name of the thing,
the body was all the footage you shot on the trip. Love this. So it's all good.
Awesome.
We're off to the speed bump. I'm not nervous anymore. We're doing good. I'm happy. And thank you, Anthony. Keep listening. Write in. What are you vulnerable about? Why is your life doing bad? Why don't you write in and talk about it? And we'll talk about it on the podcast. You could be kind of vague, you know? We'll give you some advice.
Oh, I will see your shitty life and I will raise you. Some other things. But everyone battles demons and, you know, at this type of stuff, like I listen to podcasts, it's a form of escapism.
Sure.
You know, I love listening to just people talk about just social commentary. You know, things that it just provides affirmation. When you hear somebody talk about a topic or their own life, you're like, oh, okay, he gets it.
Of course.
He gets it.
Of course. I love it. All right, one more email, then we'll get back into Doug's story. From Raphael.
Was I telling a story?
You're telling the story of Doug.
Oh, like my story.
Yeah. From Raphael, subject line, restaurant prices. We started a podcast recently by really having a deep conversation about the fact, and maybe Doug will agree with us. Do you feel like sometimes recently it seems like food is incredibly overpriced all of a sudden?
Oh, yeah.
I went to Panera. I got a sandwich and a cup of soup, and it was $18.
Yeah.
That seems a little outrageous.
It's nuts, and I would love to see the calculations that go into this.
Me too.
And
me
I know
too.
That delivery costs are going up because of the pandemic. Whatever.
Okay, delivery. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. So that's what's causing everything to go up. But
still.
Yeah.
Sorry. So Raphael writes, "I'm a little behind, but I just listened to the episode where you talk about increased restaurant prices. Brad dismissed the idea that it was because of better wages for workers, but I don't think he's correct about that."
That's all right. We can disagree.
"I work for a nationwide chain, and my pay has gone up 21.5% in the past year."
Congratulations.
"Workers earning less than me have seen raises of at least 25%, and of course, our starting wage has risen. It's very hard to attract workers to the service industry these days. We have in our unit probably 60 to 70% of the employees we actually need. There are supply chain issues that have raised some food prices, but labor increases are the biggest reasons for higher prices."
Okay.
"Chuck, are we going to get any more TESD Town history?" I'll read that again. "Chuck, are we going to get any more TESD Town history? This is a question that may not be your place to answer. You may just not want to go into it, but I've always wondered how it was decided who filmed what for the TESD Patreon. Ooh. Or who would be the director if it's all hand on deck. Thanks for the entertainment. Raphael." All right. Good info from behind the scenes.
Yeah, I'll defer it to your judgment.
Raphael knows. Tell Michelangelo we said hello.
Oh, come on.
And low-hanging fruit. All right, fine. Splinter.
Okay.
Baxter Stockman.
Yes.
So are we going to see any more TESD Town history? That's the podcast that I did the one-on-ones with the guys from New Jersey.
Okay.
That has been moved over to the Patreon, the Tell Them Steve Dave Patreon. It's now called the Tezzy Tapes. And yes, episode 2 is going to drop really soon. We just recorded it Sunday night. And I think it'll be out in the next 2 weeks. It has to do with the month of October.
Oh.
That's all I'll say. But it's going to be a great one. And the recording was over 2 hours long. So you're going to really have some fun with it. How is it decided who films what for the Tell Them Steve Dave Patreon? I don't know. No, the answer is basically, you know, there's a couple people that film. It's myself, Victor Juarez, and Brian Rupert. I think when it started, you know, I was the person who basically was filming all the stuff at first. And Rupert was like helping me out essentially when the Patreon started in 2018. Eventually, you know, I live in Rhode Island. So eventually, you know, there were smaller shoots where it's just like they wanted to get together for a couple hours on a Tuesday or whatever. And they didn't want to have to ask me to go all the way to New Jersey for that. So Victor, who was originally a photographer, started filming stuff that was smaller. I think Victor and Rupert actually both filmed the all new Sunday Jeff show. And after some time went by, I think it just kind of fell into place that it's like, well, Chuck does Frank Five's Rewind and Victor does the all new Sunday Jeff show and Chuck does, you know, the new Toho show. And basically whatever show you kind of started with, you would continue to direct that series. If it's all hands on deck, it depends. You know, like this year, Walt said, "Do you want to handle the Halloween episode?" I said, sure. And so it might be all hands on deck, but we've just decided that I'm going to be the one directing it. Usually when it's a bunch of us, for the most part, it seems like I'm the one that's directing, but that's not the case 100% of the time, because I know that last year Victor directed the Halloween special. But usually I think it's me. I don't know. But we don't really have it laid out. I think that basically different people take on different series. But who knows? I don't think it's really super segmented. And Walt has a lot of master plans in his head. He doesn't always communicate them to us. Like, at one point, he was like, oh, yeah, every podcast is going to be video and audio. And he kind of said that, like, oh, of course we're doing that, when he had explained that to nobody. So it's really all up to Walt. And he just says, hey, you want to do this? And one of us says yes. And that's all there is to it. But thank you, Raphael. I appreciate that. Nice. And we're going to stop the emails there. And we're going to go back to Doug. So, Doug, where did you meet Mark Norman? Because that's the link between you and I.
Where did I meet Mark? I met him at the Boston Comedy Festival. We both did, we both did BCF in 2013.
There you go.
I didn't make it past the preliminary round. I did well, but you know, it's super, a lot of funny people in the, right, in the, yeah, Boston Comedy Festival, like comics from all over the country flying.
Right.
But it was just fun to like hang out. So I would go to like, you know, see my friends in like the other rounds. And I stayed up there for the finals, and Mark was in the finals with Ray Harrington and,
yes,
and
that's
Matt,
right,
D,
I knew
Alinga
about that.
Mitra.
Wow.
So one of the guys that was like helping run it, mm-hmm, I was like, he's a friend of mine, he's a comic, and I was just like, hey man, I'm just hanging out for the finals. If you need any help, like, let me know what you need. I'll just volunteer. Like, I had my Boston Comedy Festival shirt on that they,
yeah,
gave me already, so
right, yeah,
I just looked like I was helping. And he's like, actually, we're all going over to the theater where the finals are being held. And one of the guys, his comic Mark Norman, is in the finals. He doesn't know like where the green room is. Do you mind just waiting outside the theater?
Yeah.
And you know, look for him, and then you can bring him back. And at the time, Mark had written like an article for some website, like right before that, about like what it was like to move to New York from New Orleans and like,
really,
work as a janitor while starting,
you wrote
comedy.
An article?
He did like an interview or something.
Okay.
And this is when I lived in. This is right before I moved to New York. This is when I was still living in Newport. And I sent him a message. Just like, dude, I just read that interview. It was, yeah, like so inspiring. And I was planning on moving to New York, and this is like, you know, get me excited. And you know, obviously now I'm back in Rhode Island and moved out of New York. But anyway, so I was waiting outside the theater for him, and he comes up. He's like, hey. And I was like, I'm Doug. He's like, big fan.
Never
met him before in my life.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, I'm the guy who sent you that message about the article. And he probably had no idea what I was talking about. He's like, oh, cool. Yeah. What's up? What's shaking?
Yeah.
And I showed him where the back room was. Mark Maron was back there.
Yeah.
He was just like in the green room, just chilling, because he was doing like a guest set or I don't know, special guest appearance.
Right, right. He was a draw on the show.
Yeah. So then he was like, all right, when you move to New York, just hit me up. And then I saw him at a few bar shows, and then he was headlining the Comedy Connection like later that year, right after I moved to New York.
Right.
And he's like, hey, you're from there. Do you want to, you know, open for me?
Yeah.
And then I texted Corey, the owner, and I was just like, hey, can you put me down for this weekend? Cause Mark, you know, he wants me to open for him. And I was so psyched. And, and then we started doing the road together after that.
Yeah. That's,
you know,
great.
We have a lot in common. We both like, you know, he kind of sounds like an old man. I work with old people all day, so we have a lot of similar terms that we use.
Yeah.
We both grew up skateboarding, so sometimes we'd skate.
Yeah,
you know, he would like bust my skateboard out of the trunk, and we would just and then we just drank and it was fun.
That's great.
Know, he's a good friend.
That's awesome.
He's helped
you're
me
like,
out a lot.
So. Cracker Jack Ollie, and you're like, well, that combined old person lingo with skateboarding lingo.
He's a great guy.
He's a good hang, and you know, I owe a lot to him with my, you know, career right now, and
for sure.
So I'm fine with, you know, like I said, I've been open for a while, and you know, I'll headline like off night set clubs and little indie shows, but I'm totally content with just being, you know, there's a stigma of like being an opener,
right?
And I still get to do comedy. I'm doing what I love doing, and I get to work with my friend who's successful,
of course,
and he helps me out. So
of course, no, that's awesome.
That's how I met him.
And the reason you're here, you know, I want to get to how this started.
Yeah.
Rogue Island Comedy Festival 2021.
Yeah.
Fall edition.
We got Mark coming. We got Ray, legend Eddie Pepitone.
Let's talk about it. So this is going to be a comedy festival in Newport, Rhode Island, starting on October 7th.
Yeah, next Thursday. I don't know when this comes
out. This comes out on Friday, October 1st.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. So
this is perfect.
All right. Well, you got time. There's still plenty of tickets left to all 10 shows.
Yes.
So, yeah, Thursday, Friday, we're doing Ragged Island Brewery in Portsmouth, Rhode Island, with Eddie Pepitone, Kerry Coddett. It's going to be so fun. And then
JT Habersat, who was on our podcast.
JT Habersat. He's going to open for Eddie Pepitone.
Yep.
And then Saturday, we're at the Jane Pickens Theater in downtown Newport. Mm-hmm. Beautiful historic theater. So Ray's going to be there.
Ray Harrington, our buddy.
Yep. Kerry Coddett, Pedro Gonzalez. Super killer lineups at the theater. So definitely get those.
Yeah.
And then Sunday, Monday is at the Wayfinder Hotel, which is like a hotel that's across the street from like the old Newport Casino there.
Yeah.
So that, that's where Mark's going to be on the Monday night for the finale.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So
I'll be hanging out quite a bit in that weekend because we're going to be doing some filming.
Yep.
It's going to be a good time.
Yep.
And this Rogue Island Comedy Festival, this is semi-annual, meaning it's twice a year.
Yeah,
I thought it was biannual, but Brad tells me it's semi-annual.
I looked up the definition of these terms because when we were promoting that we're doing it twice a year, I was under the impression that biannual meant every other year. Just like if you're getting paid bi-weekly, you get paid every other week.
Ooh.
Right?
That's interesting.
So I just thought, okay, it's got to be a different term. So I looked it up. And
bisexual, both. So it's both seasons.
True.
Summer and autumn.
Yes. I love sucking both seasons.
There's more than two seasons, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
sorry.
Yes.
Yeah. Pan seasonal.
Binoculars. It doesn't have a season. It doesn't identify as a season.
Aseasonal.
So is it aseasonal? So is it semi? Brad?
I got a semi. Well,
Doug
was saying how he looked it up to make sure he knew.
So you
which
knew it was semi?
Correct.
So it's semi.
I think we've been going with that. So I'm committing to the bit here.
All right.
Semi-annual. That sounds good.
Yeah. You're right about biweekly for sure.
Yeah. I think they're interchangeable. I think nobody questions
that's
it.
That's correct.
Here's what I'll say.
You shouldn't question.
What's a bicentennial? Anybody. Is that 200 years?
It is.
Oh, that's another point for the two. See, here's what's hard about the two. Here's what's hard about the bi.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like a very useful prefix.
No.
How often do you use, like, sure, bisexual, I get it. But that means two in that scenario, which is 100% of this. Well, I don't even want to get into this. But in terms of numbers, weekly, monthly, yearly, it's weird to hold something every 2 months, every 2 years.
Right.
That's weird. Like, how often would you use that? Like, paychecks for sure, biweekly. But what's bimonthly? What's bi-yearly?
Well, Chuck and Brad, time is a construct.
Yes.
And it's linear. Yeah. So really, we're just assigning time with names like January and Thursday.
Sure.
Yeah. Just let it identify as whatever it wants. It's just a construct.
That's fair.
Just but it like
is,
gender.
But the bi is weird. I always thought bi was twice a blank. But I'm wrong.
Yeah.
And I thought semi was like, oh, we do this sometimes. Yeah. Is that stupid too?
That's stupider than the bi, because the bi means like it can mean either if something is bi-monthly, that means either every other month or twice a month.
You think it means either?
Yes.
So bi-weekly, you can get a paycheck every 3.5 days?
Ooh. Yes.
That's hard.
Yeah,
it's fluid.
It's bi-fluid.
You should turn this into a bit, because all this stuff is interesting. I'll say this. Like our Halloween show, I thought that was like semi-annual.
No.
Because we haven't done it in a couple of years.
No.
Interesting.
That's incorrect.
So you can't. So, okay, if I want to have a phrase that means sometimes we do this every year.
You would not be wrong if you just invented a new term, because you...
Get your Latin prefix dictionary out.
Dicks.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So anyway, this is the first year where we're doing it semi-annually.
Which is twice a year.
Yeah, we just did it in May, and it sold out in advance because in this past May, everything opened 100% full capacity. Everyone was excited. So now we still have tickets left. We went back to the original 5-day schedule. So there's still plenty of tickets left. So go on RogueIslandComedyFest.com for tickets.
Yes.
It's so fun. Every show's got like 6 to 7 comics, all different styles and backgrounds, and it's very diverse lineups and different voices. So you're gonna get a nice little variety pack instead of going to see, you know, a standard comedy show where you're seeing like, you know, the same guy for an hour, which is great if it's you're a fan of that comic. But the beauty of the festival is people go in not knowing anybody on the lineup, and they go out being like, oh, I love this guy, and that girl was great, and he was funny.
Yeah, right.
And it's just a cool vibe. The comics interact with the fans, with the crowds, and there's food trucks at the outdoor venues. It's
hell yeah.
It's you know, you go from one show to the next in true festival format. It's so fun. We have after parties, and it's our 7th year doing it, and we hope to keep growing it, keep doing it.
That's awesome.
I'm so interested. Like, you know,
it seems like a lot of work.
Yeah, this is
see these gray streaks in the hair. It's all festival they look and beautiful. Grad school, but yes.
At some point you were like, there should be a comedy festival in Newport.
Well, that was when I used to run the Wasted Talent show at the BYOB Theater in Newport. It used to sell out every month. It was just once a month, and I was like, why don't I just do multiple shows like this in one weekend and call it a fest? And that's how I wanted to start.
Did.
Wow. Yeah. So how is that undertaking? I mean, that's got to be an interesting thing to be like, oh, let me see if I can run this festival. Like, how did that start? How did you actually say,
I definitely needed help. You know, at the time, Rob Green was helping me out.
Oh, yeah. Rob Green.
Whatever
happened to that guy? I never see him. I love that guy.
He's in, I think, Massachusetts.
Yeah, he's around. Somewhere. He's around. I just haven't seen him.
Yeah. So we both lived in New York at the time. So we would like get together. We would plan it out.
Oh, I didn't even know Rob Green lived in New York.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So he gave me a lot of great insight on like, you know, what we should do. And
I love that, dude.
Yeah.
He's super, super funny.
Yeah.
Oh, he's
wicked clever.
Yeah, he's one of my best friends. Yeah, he's so funny.
He's really funny.
So yeah. And then one of my friends, Katie Latimer, she's my partner who I do it with now. She was like my marketing director and she's taken on a lot of roles. She's helped me out. She does all like the website development, the ticket integration, the graphic design, makes the posters, the flyers, everything you see on the website and on our social media, she does.
We met her this weekend. She's kind of a loose cannon. I like it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. She's crazy. She's got, you know, 15,000 kids and she's a wizard. We're like yin yang. We complement each other very well. I deal with all the talent and the comics and the, you know, accommodations, the venues, the Newport stuff. Since it's a lot of locals that come out and a lot of people I know, friends, family, coworkers. But because it's Newport, it's a very touristy town.
Yeah.
So like most of our sales come from just walk-ups and people that are vacationing there.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So get tickets now before the vulture tourists come in.
Yeah. Those pieces of shit.
Next weekend.
Fuck
and
off.
Scoop them up.
What do we call them? Do we have a name for them? The semi-Newport visitors.
Yeah.
Is that right?
The occasional stopper buyers.
We want you to be here 110 times, but not bi-yearly.
Yes.
Right? They only come
perfect.
Two.
Yeah.
No, it's great. It's awesome. Rogue Island Comedy Festival. It's rogueislandcomedyfest.com. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. Go on our social media, on our Instagram. We post all like up-to-date stuff, you know, with whether it's discount codes or, you know, changes in lineups or anything that happens. We post that.
Very cool. Rhode Island, Connecticut, Massachusetts. Come on down. It's a big comedy festival. And a lot of great comics are going to be there. It's going to be a real lot of fun.
Yeah.
That's the kind of the reason that we were like, I mean, we talked in Poughkeepsie. Then we talked about, you know, filming this past weekend. And I was like, dude, why aren't you coming on the podcast? I messaged you earlier this week.
No, I appreciate it. You know, I any promotion I can do, it's great. But I just love, you know, hanging out with you.
It's fun.
You know, you're a buddy and Brad.
Brad's a new guy.
I'm also here.
Hung out the other night, but we were, you know, having a few cocktails and, you know, everyone's girlfriend was sleeping at the table and it was great.
James Firth, man.
I love him too.
So basically here's what this weekend was. It was Mark Norman headlining at the Comedy Connection. It was, I think it was Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And then those all sold out. So there was a show added Sunday. So it was a total of six shows. Doug was the feature. And so, you know, we filmed documentary stuff Thursday night, and then we were all supposed to go out. Well, so basically we all, you know, filmed documentary stuff Thursday night. We were getting ready to film Doug's special, but we just kind of filmed the doc stuff. Then we all went out afterwards to Ogie's, right? Like a bunch of us. Like it was like eight of us.
Yes.
Me, Gina, Brad, Doug, Katie, Mark, and James Firth and his girlfriend who I didn't really meet.
Cass.
And we all hung out that night. I felt bad, Brad. You were on the edge of the table. You didn't talk that much.
I did. I felt very excluded.
What do you mean?
No, I just like I couldn't get into the conversation on that half of the table.
I know
table.
That happens.
Yeah. But I talked with Firth and with his girlfriend. I 99% sure her name is Cass. And if not,
Mama Cass.
Yeah. And
by the way, she wasn't sleeping. she had choked on a ham sandwich.
Yeah. Okay, that's what happened.
But I enjoyed my conversation.
True silent aspirator.
Yeah. Yeah. And
choked on a ham sandwich.
Yeah, it was a weird night. Somebody, like another group, was sitting by a fire pit, and a menu caught on fire and blew towards us.
Oh yeah, you stomped it out and you saved the day like a firefighter.
Yes.
Yeah. I just shout out to James Firth. He did a great job all
weekend.
Yeah,
yeah. He's hilarious.
You know, he's so funny, and it's because he's kind of like a deadpan comic.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's very dry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever. And you know, he's like, you have any tips on hosting? You know, like, can you give me any?
Yeah.
You know, because he's like, you hosted here. I was like, well, I guess whatever your act is, whatever energy level you are, just turn it up a couple notches when you host, because you got to welcome everybody, whatever. Yeah. And, you know, he'd go out there and he'd be like, hey, everybody, Providence, Newport, Rhode Island.
Yeah.
He'd be like, Mark Norman's here. And everyone's like, woo. And then he would just be like, so, guys, I just brought it right back down. And I was
he was
like,
great.
I respect that. He did exactly what he should have done. And then he'd be in the green room and he was just yucking it up with Mark. He was like giving Mark line like tags. And Mark was like, that's good. That's great.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
he's a good comic.
No, it was good because we all hung out all weekend, like Friday day. We were all supposed to go out, but you were like, I gotta work on this thing. So me and Mark went out. And then at the show, you know, we shot all night. Where did we go after Friday night? We went to that bar next door.
And then
I hung out with Mark on Saturday. Me and Brad podcasted with him, but then I went to Jersey. But the whole time it was funny because this funny group was basically Mark, me, you, James Firth. Like Gina was there most of the time. Brad was there some of the time. And Firth is like, James Firth is just funny. And someone said to him, a girl that was part of the group on Friday, you missed this because you were at the other table. She goes, you know what? You look like Chicken Little to Firth. And it just started this you look like thing. And we're going back and forth. And oh my God,
That was an unforgettable weekend.
Yeah, it really was. You know, it was really fun.
You know, I can't thank you enough. Thank you for taking that on. And now I feel like I've accomplished something in my 12 years of comedy. I have something to leave behind.
Oh, hell yeah, dude. I can't wait for us to keep going forward with it and see, you know, how it comes out and everything. I'm very psyched on the filming because I was like, you know, this to me, the secret to filming is back up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like make sure you have everything. And I think we really killed it in terms of coverage and
stuff. I'm glad we did it in the format we did it in was great because I got to get, you know, a few sets run and you know, I think I'm happy with it. And of course, right after I'm done filming, I'm like, I forgot to do that joke. Yeah. I forgot to do that tag. I forgot to do this line. And but it's in the can now and I got to just start over.
No, it's great. And hot
clean
crowds.
Slate.
Hot crowds too.
Oh, really hot crowds.
It was really, really
good. I think
good.
When James brought me up, he did mention he's like, he's recording something tonight. And I think that kind of like turned him up a notch.
I think so. I think people care about this person that we don't even know yet.
Right.
Let's support this.
And that's why
this.
I wanted to do it this way because I did not invite any of my family or friends. I didn't tell anybody I was doing this. So it's all people that don't know. Maybe they see me open for Mark in the past, but they don't really know me. They don't know my act. Yeah. So I just wanted to get that honest.
Yeah. That's
great. Honest laughs, you know?
I love that. But yeah, it was a great weekend. I'm glad we've become friends over the past couple months.
Yeah, man. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you at the fest, and I hope you can make a night or two.
I'm like, all right, so Friday night,
and if you're a true Chubby, Chubby?
Yeah.
If you're a true Chubby,
and
you love comedy, come out and support Rogue Island and say hi to Chuck. He'll be behind the camera, and I'll be hosting the shows.
The Chubbies love Ray, too, so don't forget. Ray Harrington Sunday night.
Well, the Chubbies that love Ray call themselves Rabies.
Because Ray came on, and he was talking about how he hates the name Chubbies.
Okay.
And I was like, Ray, you're just mad because there's not enough rabies. And he's like, and he hates rabies now. But he shouldn't have said anything about Chubbies. He was in a good spot.
Yeah.
But yeah, come out and see Ray. That's going to be Sunday. RogueIslandComedyFest.com for all the info. Follow him on Instagram. That's the best way to do it.
Yep.
Get those tickets now. Follow Doug.
Yeah, at Douglas Key.
That's right.
Birth given name.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
So yeah, hopefully we'll be working more together. Come back in the podcast anytime. It's always fun to hang out and shoot the shit.
Of course.
I'd love to do some stuff like, you know, this weekend was kind of crazy.
Right.
But it'd be fun to be like at the Connection. Because one thing that was cool about the Comedy Connection this weekend was like all these sold out shows, but we're all friends just hanging out.
Yeah,
around the shows,
weird?
You know, it's fun.
It's weird? Cool.
Even Corey and Dave, who own the club, it's like we all know each other through different ways.
And they're paying to you in mozzarella sticks.
Isn't that funny? Six sold out shows, the amount of money going in there, and I'm getting paid $75. No, I'm kidding. it's been great being here.
But like, I would love the idea of like if that was not us filming for you, having doing the podcast in the green room like during the shows with like Mark being like, oh, I gotta go, and like, you know, this kind of stuff back and forth. Oh, it's good stuff. I love it. But
you know, great club, and it's my home club, and I'm super grateful for those guys that, you know, give me time all these years. So thank you, Comedy Connection.
Hell yeah, love the Comedy Connection. We'll be back there very soon, October 21st. We should do an ad before the show because we totally forgot to plug the show.
Well, I was gonna stick one in here.
We'll do it at the beginning.
Yep.
All right, buddy. Doug Key, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Great time.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, we appreciated it. You know, you have a joke in your act, and you say, boy, I hope this was your act and not Mark's. Oof. And you say, like, oh, you're going to think of this someday when your windshield wipers are going.
Yes, that's Doug.
That's the closer.
That happened to me, I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before, but I'm driving, dry windshield wipers, and I was like, huh?
Yeah,
so it stayed with me.
Nice. If you want to know the point, the premise of that joke, you gotta buy the album.
Yeah, you gotta see the special.
So it's good stuff. Doug Key is a name I've heard around the scene since we started in 2015. Yep. So I'm glad that you live up to your reputation as somebody who is funny and a good dude.
I appreciate that.
So it's good stuff.
That means a lot.
Yeah.
By, so I'll jerk you guys both off.
Yes,
as soon
thank
as
you.
Oh, I was hoping for Pan. Come on. At least semi.
I'm semi-sexual.
I like that sound.
Softcore porn is semi-sexual. folks out there, thank you all so much for listening. If you want to write to us, chuckandbrad@gmail.com, or find the email link through chuckandbradpodcast.com. Happy to hear from you. Happy to hear what's going on in your life. Happy to get vulnerable with you.
Yes.
If that helps. But we do appreciate each and every one of you. That's all I've got.
That's all I got.
Thanks, Doug.
Thank you.
Deuces.
So much left to say.